it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Nearly got a try on that left-hand side. What happened?
Oh, but I'm going up and over and he head over biscuit. It wasn't enough stability there for myself, but no, I was busting for a bit of meat this game. It didn't seem to work out.
Hello, cheers, and welcome to the Scrum of the Earth podcast, the weekly show for news, reviews, great interviews, and so much more, all about the world of rugby. My name is David Lawrence. I'm an American rugby fan who follows the game wherever I can find it, all over the globe. If you'd like to get in touch, well, I'm easy to find on all your socials, and you can always just drop me an email at thescrumoftheearth@gmail.com. Well, there was a modest modicum of action this weekend, so let's get this show on the road. Well, starting as always with our current updates, and I apologize, but I've got more baseball talk. So as you know, my son has started his new season. I got to say, it's been tough. Like, he's a natural hitter. He even made the town all-star team in his second year. But this year, dude, he's had five games, hasn't gotten a hit. And that's fine. It's a new level with kids like 2 or 3 years older than him playing. But the tough part is he just keeps striking out looking. Like, as my mom would say, they're turning him into a pair of shoes out there. In his defense, the teenagers, they get to umpire, and I'm not even kidding here. I feel very sure they tell them to picture a very large strike zone. I mean, if they didn't, every kid would walk, right? But it's tough when you're trying to teach your kid to, like, have a good eye and wait for a good pitch. And then one buzzes, like, just over his forehead, and they're like, strike! So, anyway, I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I think I have to explain that if he wants to get on base this year, he's going to have to go hunting for a few.
It's too good! People have to know!
Yes, Isa, it is good news this week, especially for rugby fans in island nations that don't often get mentioned in this space. So quoting here from America's Rugby News, quote, Bermuda played host to the Cayman Islands in a rugby test match on Saturday, played at North Field at the National Sports Center. The Cayman Islands were 44-12 winners. The fixture was part of the Rugby Americas North, or RAN, qualification pathway. The competition is being played over a three-year period from 2024 to 2026. Teams are competing for places as regional finalists for the Americas Rugby Challenge competition. The match itself was preparation for the RAN Men's 15s. The 2024 tournament started last weekend in the Port of Spain. Guyana were upset winners over host Trinidad and Tobago. The RAN Men's 15s will resume on May 18th with Jamaica playing host to Bermuda. Bermuda will play the May 18th match away against Jamaica. From there will be a home match against the Bahamas on June 1st. Meanwhile, the Cayman Islands will take on Mexico in the Cayman Islands on May 31st. I swear, if there was a way to watch all of this, like, I might actually turn this pod into a show entirely about people playing rugby where it's spectacularly nice out all the time, except when there's like a massive hurricane or tsunami. Moving on to our thoughts of the week, and my thoughts this week are on the sheer number of All Blacks players who are succumbing to the injury bug in Super Rugby this season. So, quoting here, quote, Crusaders captain Scott Barrett lasted just 13 minutes in his return as back spasms forced him from the field against the Reds as five All Blacks players suffered injuries in the latest round of Super Rugby Pacific. Barrett had spent over a month on the sidelines with a broken finger, suffered in the early rounds of the competition. The loss of the inspirational captain against the Reds came after All Blacks loose forward Ethan Blackadder was a pregame withdrawal and could be out for a couple of weeks. Barrett's injury will have wider concerns as the All Black lock is expected to lead the second row with the departures of Brody Retallick and Sam Whitelock. The Chiefs were buoyed by the initial diagnosis of blindside flanker Semapeny Finau, who left the field midway through the first half clutching his shoulder after being tackled in a two-man force hit. That sounds good, a force hit. Wow. When you're on the force, you make force hits. Head coach Clayton McMillan in his post-match interview believed the AC joint had been bruised, but no separation had occurred. He expected Finau will be unfit to play next week, but the shoulder concern was not a long-term injury. Quote, all the tens in the competition were probably putting all their karma that way, McMillan joked with reporters. First 5/8, Damian McKenzie also was forced from the field in the 57th minute for an HIA and did not return. McKenzie fell in the process of setting up Daniel Rona and took a knock, crashing into Wallabies big man Isaac Rada. Along with Finau, he will be expected to miss some time. The dynamic number 10 is one of the leading candidates to start in Richie Mwanga's absence, and the All Blacks will be hoping he returns to full fitness as soon as possible. Another injury concern was All Black center Rico Ioane, who was expected to be ruled out for weeks after suffering a bad head knock against the Rebels. Ioane was helped from the field after a collision with a hip left him grounded and requiring medical attention. Yeah, it was kind of ugly. The Blues' number 13 will likely miss next week's matchup with the Hurricanes, where he would have squared off against All Black hopeful Billy Proctor. So all five of the injured players are potential All Black starters, unquote. Well, I doubt, you know, too many of you listeners are shedding tears for injury woes for the All Blacks, but for me, I figured it was worth mentioning. Well, that, of course, brings us to our reviews, and with our usual competitions on hold, it was time to get stuck right back into the semifinals for both European Cups in the EPCR. That, of course, meant in the Heineken Cup, we started on Saturday with Leinster, who were hosting the Northampton Saints at a sold-out Croke Park. I found an interesting article in the lead-up talking about what a big deal it is to have the match at such an historically significant venue. So, quoting here, Northampton will become the first English club side to play a competitive rugby fixture at iconic Croke Park when they take on four-time European champions Leinster in the Investec Champions Cup semifinal this Saturday. Croke Park was the location of the Bloody Sunday Massacre in 1920, when British forces opened fire and killed 14 people at a Gaelic football match, and its place in Irish history transcends sport. Leinster have only ever played one previous game at the headquarters of the Gaelic Athletic Association. That was against Munster in 2009. England famously played Ireland there 2 years before that in the Six Nations, and a cauldron-like atmosphere is now expected for the visit of the Saints. Understanding and respecting the history of the semifinal venue has figured in Saints' preparations for their biggest match in a decade, with their Irish S&C coach, I think it's Eamon Hyland, giving the squad the lowdown on Croke Park on Tuesday morning. Quote, "It is absolutely fundamental that we have an appreciation of the history and significance, both culturally and historically, in the Irish battle for independence and the psyche and the GAA and where that is held in terms of the Irish culture and how important that is," explained Saints director of rugby Phil Dowson. We had one of our members on staff who is Irish deliver a very brief and succinct history of Croke Park and what that entails and what that means. That is important for two reasons. Mainly it's important because we should have an understanding of the history regardless of whether playing rugby or not. And secondly, we have to understand the influence that's going to have both on the playing group and the crowd and the implications of that around the atmosphere. But at the same time, we are not playing against ghosts. We have to get our game on the field, and we have to make sure that we play appropriately and give it the respect it deserves of being a semifinal at Croke Park, which is hugely exciting. Wow, I was fired up. Looking at the actual matchup ahead of time, according to the preview, Leinster Rugby liked to hoard possession, having conceded the fewest turnovers in the tournament at an average of 8.8 per match. They would likely need to be on exactly that sort of form against the Northampton side, who've made more successful tackles than any other team at an average of 163 per game and a 90.2% success rate, also a tournament best. Both teams have informed focal points on their attack too, with James Lowe racking up tries for Leinster on the wing and Northampton Saints Tommy Freeman in the top three, both for meters after contact and offloading. As for the actual game, I mean, what an atmosphere. The comms reminding us it took just 3 hours to sell out the house, and they were in full voice as things got underway. Last week, I speculated that the Saints' trip to Dublin might be like walking into a threshing machine. While it didn't feel that bad, it was still 15-3 headed into the intermission, and it felt like the floodgates could open at any moment. To their credit, under 5 minutes left, Northampton, they clawed to within three. The comms told us it was squeaky bum time for Leinster, but I'll tell you, the crowd disagreed. What a roar of support. Robbie Henshaw may have iced it with a brilliant collection of a high kick, and despite a desperate effort at the death, Northampton just couldn't get the rabbit all the way out. Leinster, to the surprise of no one, held on to advance to yet another European final, but a squeaky one, 20-17. on Cinco de Mayo, it was Toulouse at home for my Harlequins, who've already exceeded my expectations by even getting this far. So even staying close would have been the icing on the cake for me. In the match preview for this one, I found a prescient quote where they said, Harlequins can thrill on their day, but the suspicion is that the Gallagher Premiership Club have a soft underbelly, and that if it proves to be the case on Sunday, Stade Toulousain will expose it ruthlessly. But how soft is it? Harlequins found a more dogged edge in the face of a spirited Northampton Saints fight back at Twickenham last week, beating the Premiership leaders despite being a man down after for a half hour of the game, unquote. So we would soon, of course, have our answer. Mike Quinns, they definitely looked like they might be able to hang for a little while, but, you know, as I watched Entomac angrily shaking his head after a Harlequins try, all I could think was, he expects to win and, like, by a lot. I was shocked to see it was actually a really close game on the scoreboard. Like, it just didn't feel close watching. But Quinns, we're only down 5 with a quarter hour to go. A valiant effort, we'll call it, but kind of felt like every single person watching knew what was up. A late score made it look respectable, but it was never in doubt. By now, you've undoubtedly been seeing all the name-calling and finger-pointing going Joe Marler's way after his absolute brain fart, so I don't feel like going on about it. It just seems very in character for Marler. And the Toulouse players, they were ecstatic as soon as they realized what he'd done to his own team. So there's no certainty that Quinns would have come all the way back if that hadn't happened, but it is certain this little outburst slammed the door shut for good. I have to say, it's hard to see him getting picked for England again after this. Like, I know he was semi on his way out, like, for the third time, I think. But I don't know. With this, you can't trust him to be out there, you know, in a tight game, right? Either way, Toulouse, they got it done in the end, punching their ticket to the final. It was 35-26. In the Colt 45 Malt Liquor Cup, we began with Sharks at the Stoop to face Claremont. This was a match about which I had not a clue. Like, on paper, the Sharks look like an all-star team, but they've massively underperformed all year in the USC, while Claremont are sub-500 and sitting a couple places outside of playoff contention in the top 14. Neither team had the advantage of a home fixture, and I had no sense what the crowd might be like. Like, so easier travel for the French fans, but you know, traveling to away games is not really a big thing for top 14 fans, right? I mean, would the prospect of, you know, muted glory in Europe bring them out? And how many planes would it take Sharks fans to even get there? So as far as I could tell, these were two teams meeting for the very first time, though both teams had played at the Stoop in the past. The Sharks, as recently as last November, when they had that weird match against the Ospreys in the ORC. Claremont, they had a bit more pedigree, having won the Challenge Cup 3 times and being runners-up for another. The Sharks have historically lacked semifinal success, having reached that stage 8 times out of 24 seasons back in Super Rugby without winning even one. So it was a gorgeous day in London and it looked like a bit of a sparse crowd, but they made up for it with their overall enthusiasm. I don't know if it was an intentional jab or not, but the comms referred to the South African fans on hands as a gang of fans, which cracked me up a bit. It was an exciting first half, with Claremont seeming to flip the script by being the ones to lay the big hits. The Sharks weren't shy about taking points when they were on offer. We were all tied up after maybe 27 minutes. Worthy of concern, however, was Claremont's discipline, as they'd already committed 8 penalties before a half hour had gone by. Quote, it's the power of the Sharks versus the panache of Claremont, said the comms, quite poetically. So a big win at scrum time for Claremont felt like it might have been a turning point with only a few minutes left in the opening stanza. The resulting penalty by Anthony Bello, who I placed anywhere between 20 and 46 years old. He pushed the nominal visitors ahead as we went to the break, 18-28. For me, it looked like the tide might have turned in Claremont's favor again when just then an unreal turnover created by human tricep Eben Etzebeth that got his team the ball back and a chance to fight back. So when Fosse got sent off after the longest review process in the history of rugby union, it looked like the window might have closed for the Sharks. Gotta say, this game was just super intense. Every impact seemed heightened. Every effort over the ball felt like a lightning strike. And all those people who disregard the Challenge Cup out of hand, I'm sorry, you're missing the boat. Like, especially when we're at this stage, like, it was so good. Sia Masuku making it 8 for 8 off the tee. I mean, are you kidding me? He gave the Sharks a lead very late, and it was as the comms said, a mighty, mighty comeback as Sharks squeaked one out against a team that frankly should have won. Claremont supporters in shock as the gang of fans erupted. It was 32-31, an unbelievably great semifinal. Our other semifinal was, of course, Gloucester at King's Home to take on Benetton. I was actually pretty excited for this one. Gloucester, it seems to me, have put all their eggs in the European basket, but Benetton were in a position to make history, not just for their club, but for Italian club rugby in general, if they could make a European final. While Gloucester had no real hope of getting anywhere in the Prem this year, Benetton still sat in eighth place in the URC, but their postseason, their hopes, a little precarious, with a trip to South Africa still to come. Gloucester, they came in with a dominant scrum, having won 19 penalties throughout the tournament thus far, while on the other side, Benetton Rugby were averaging more turnovers per game than any other team left in the competition and had the tournament's most dangerous player in Onisi Ratave, who had the most clean breaks, most offloads, and the most tries. Yeah, he's pretty good. So I admit, I had Benetton in this one, and I was very wrong. I mean, they held close, but Gloucester, they're clearly on a mission this year, and they just, again, showed us what they're actually capable of. Side note, if I was a Gloucester supporter, I'd be like, so where are these performances in our domestic competition? Like, why are we on our way to a final in Europe while we're a laughing stock at home? So weird. Anyway, final score was 40-23. Love to be a fly on the wall for the planning sessions for both the Cherry and Whites and the Sharks. I mean, the unknowables are through the roof. I'm just utterly fizzing for the final act in this bizarre, beautiful drama. Okay, down in Super Rugby Pacific, we had a full slate for round 11 of 15, with things coming to a head in the most exciting iteration of this competition, I think, since before COVID, maybe even a couple of years before then. This week, we started with Hurricanes versus Waratahs. It was your pick for the official game of the week. I imagine some of you might like takesies backsies on that one after what turned out to be an entirely one-sided affair. The Taz never getting out of first gear against a team that really had a point to prove after the surprising loss last weekend. TJ Perenara, he's been relishing his increased role this season and nabbed his record-setting 64th career try, moving into sole possession of that stat. That was part of a 7-try romp, including a brace from Selesi Riassi. The Waratahs coaches were pretty frank in their comments afterwards, at one point saying, quote, "We're not tackling hard enough, not carrying hard enough. Speed around the field is probably not up to it either," unquote. So the Taz find themselves at 2-8 on the season with a challenging final few rounds. But I suspect if you had asked them a year ago, hey, how'd you like to have the same record as the Crusaders after week 11, they'd have fallen over backwards to agree. And yet, here we are. Rebels versus the Blues saw the will-they-or-won't-they Rebels back to their usual selves, scoring just 11 points at home while giving away close to 40. It's funny, because when you look at the match stats, both teams are eerily close in terms of, carries, defenders beaten, clean breaks. Even the set-piece stats tell very similar stories. Where they aren't similar, all comes down to tries scored. This time the Rebels got beat 1-6. Seems so simple, right? It was an eventual 11-38 home loss. This team is bumming me out, man. By the way, I heard a few weeks ago their salvation was basically in the bag, but what I've heard about that since seems to imply Rugby Australia are just too mad at them to do anything at all to help them out. I genuinely fear rounds 12 through 15 might be the last time we see this club playing rugby at all. It sucks. Moana Pacifica versus Highlanders was the late game on Friday where I am, and I'm pleased to report my guys got a rare win. This was, of course, Moana's first, quote, real, unquote, home game this season. The first ever Super Rugby fixture in Tonga, making it the 11th nation to host such a match. Naturally, wouldn't you know it, it took place in a gigantic biblical-level deluge. I mean, it was bonkers. The tricky conditions didn't make it the most fun game to watch, but anytime my team scores more points than the other team, I mean, I kind of have to enjoy it, right? Highlanders, they went on to win despite giving away 17 turnovers, which feels like, I don't know, more of an indictment of the home side than praise for the visitors. 17-28 was your final score, somehow, against all reason, not to mention the eye test, keeping the Highlanders in seventh place. Weird. So Saturday, we had Crusaders versus the Reds. I think it's time I admitted defeat with this Crusaders squad. So last week, I felt all brilliant for predicting what would become a big win. And for me, it was like, okay, they're not the Crusaders of years past, but they're coming into form. And, you know, they could make some real hay at the end of the season. And then they go and get whacked by a bizarre Reds team in Christchurch, no less, where the visitors hadn't won since, wait for it, 1999. Holy cow. And in fact, it was only the second loss for the Crusaders to any Aussie team at home since 2004. And it kept the Reds' hopes afloat for finishing top four this season. Worthy of note was Lee Halfpenny playing about 36 minutes in the loss, and the visiting defense held on late to make it a 28-33 final score at what I just learned is called the Apollo Project Stadium. Really sounds like a place where you're like trying to launch interstellar rockets, not just play footy, right? Chiefs versus the Force was our next offering, and you know, offering is an apt way to look at it, with the Force sacrificing themselves on the altar of a powerful Chiefs team who were also set on making some noise. As we get into the latter stages of the competition, the home team smashed their guests to the tune of 56-7, and in some ways the visitors were lucky to come away with a single point. Just complete devastation at the FMG. The Force have been pretty bad this season, and they find themselves at the very bottom of the table. And when they've traveled to New Zealand, they've lost every single game by an average of 32 points. Woof. So finally, we finished things off with the Brumbies versus the Fijian Drua. It was an impressive win for the Brumbies, who are clinging to their spot in the top four. Two teams ahead of them, the Hurricanes and the Blues, play each other next coming weekend. So, you know, Brumbies are kind of in a good spot to try to nab that second place, though a lot can still happen. Concerning, though, was James Slipper being helped off the field with a shoulder injury in the cold and wet conditions. But for the moment, Brumbies are riding high, winning in Canberra 28-20. Here at home in the MLR, my Free Jacks were back at Fort Quincy to take on the Pups from the Second City. It was another disappointing day at home for us, though, where, you know, after this, we've actually dropped three winnable games at home. It's a really unpleasant change from what fans have been used to for several years now. We beat Chicago away early this season. I think it was the first game of the year, but they've really found some good form since then, having won four in a row and topping 50 points in their last two games just coming into this Sunday. Paulo Balacana, he got a try, his first since either week one or two. He's not been in the same form he found last year, but I can easily see that changing. And, you know, to wit, he got a second one for a brace later in the game. Unfortunately, Jason Patras took a knock later in the game and had to come off. I was chatting with Phil from the Jacks Rangers show. Both of us view that guy as perhaps the single irreplaceable player on our roster. So, of course, stay tuned for more news on that injury. After the game, Captain Josh Larson, he talked about the opportunities to win. Quote, "Today was really on us. We had opportunities. We pulled away there in the end, but we didn't finish them. The first 20 minutes of rugby is very crucial. We were trying to catch up the whole time. Every team is going to come in and try to test us," unquote, said Larson's. So final score in this one, 20-26, which leaves us at 6-3 on the season. Still good enough to be atop of the East. But of course, if we were in the West, we'd be tied for third place. Time to step it up, guys. Come on. Let's ride. Elsewhere, Seattle were home at the Starfire for stupidly named Anthem, and the Seawolves won again 29-13. Perpetually annoying DC Old Glory, they faced Miami Sharks in Germantown. I actually picked the Sharks for an upset win this time, but this apparently was the week when they just forgot how to score, so they lost 13-10. Utah, they were hosting Houston. It was a tight one, but the Thundercats, they continue their winning ways on the road, beating the Warriors 24-29. To wrap up the weekend, a marginal San Diego Legion were back at home for a visit from the Dallas Jackals. The home team did just enough to hold off the visitors 30-24 to wrap up the weekend in Major League Rugby. Oh, silly me. I can't let it go by without mentioning the lovely HSBC Sevens. It's been an incredible year. This was our penultimate event for 2024. It was in Singapore, where the tourist slogan, of course, is, "You think you've been caned in your own country? Wait till you get caned in Singapore." Nevertheless, I was very excited. I feel like I haven't adequately covered it this year, though many of you will argue that's always been true. So for the final leg, our pools on the women's side were Canada, Ireland, New Zealand, and Spain in Pool A, France, Japan, South Africa, and my awesome USA in Pool B. Pool C featured kind of an odd mix: Australia, Brazil, Fiji, and Great Britain. incredibly. And just like you'd want, New Zealand and Australia were tied at 106 points coming into the final weekend, with France and my beloved Eagles in the running, though more than 20 points behind. I'll be perfectly honest and just tell you, I don't really bother to watch the men's side of the comp. I don't have any specific reason for that, but I mean, I watch a ton of rugby, and so when I have a chance to actually watch the Sevens, all I want is my Eagles, the Wallaroos, and the Black Ferns, and I'm good to go. So my Eagles women, I mean, it was pretty disappointing. You know, I wish I had some insight into what went wrong, but they would miss out on the quarterfinals for the first time since 2020, precipitated by an opening day loss to South Africa. That really set the stage for a poor showing overall. We ended up losing every pool game this leg, and it'd be easy to blame injuries. I just think we weren't good enough. We need to get back that swagger that we got last year. In case anyone cares, I went super chalk with my predictions in the pool stages. Ended up imagining Argentina, South Africa, Fiji, and New Zealand in the men's semis, and New Zealand, USA, Australia, and Fiji on the women's side. Out of those picks, New Zealand were the only pick on the men's side that made it to the semis. But on the women's side, replaced my Eagles with France, and it was spot on. Much to the relief of the entire nation of Fiji, their men did win gold, getting back to what even the government firmly believes is their rightful place. On the women's side, it was the final we all wanted and deserved, New Zealand versus Australia again. And despite the absence of some key players, the Black Ferns got it done, besting the Wallaroos 31-21 in a thrilling match. I got to say, I just wish the Sevens was on like an opposite schedule, right? So that as soon as, say, the URC wraps up, presto, we switch gears and start having these incredible Sevens festivals. I feel like I would just pay so much more attention. It's so fun. By the music, you'll know it's time for this week's Diamond in the Ruck Award. And this week, the award goes to Siya Masuku. Mr. Masuku, you earned the world's notice this weekend as you lifted your team upon your mighty boot and wheeled them to an historic victory. You were a perfect 6-for-6 kicking penalties in the first half. And while you got no more opportunities in the second, it was your two conversions late that made the difference in the semifinal. That last one, not an easy one with less than 10 minutes to go. It was ice water in the veins stuff. There's already talk about selection for the summer tour. Siya Masuku, congratulations to you, for you are this week's Diamond in the Ruck. Well done. Well, that brings us to our updates and previews, and as you know, that means a lot of fixtures coming our way. Starting down in Super Rugby Pacific, round 12 is culture round, so get ready for a ton of fantastic pregame hype. Could be my favorite week down there. On Friday, early morning, we begin with Moana Pacifica getting another not-home game, this time to face the surging Chiefs. That's followed by the Reds versus the Rebels. Really wondering if the Reds can, you know, keep this momentum going. Friday night, we've got the big one. It's Blues versus Hurricanes. Then Highlanders host Crusaders. Waratahs are home for the Brumbies. And the Force head back out west to face the Fijian Drua. Back in the URC, we're into our final three rounds. What a season it's been. For round 16 on Friday, we'll see Dragons versus Stormers and Edinburgh versus Zebre. On Saturday, there's a big one at Loftus with Glasgow visiting the Bulls. Scarlets host Ulster. The jet-setting Sharks are home for Benetton. I mean, what squad is getting fielded that day? Munster, they take on Connacht at Thomond Park. Lions are home for Cardiff. And Leinster will smash, host Ospreys. Over in the Prem, we've got Sale versus Leicester. Newcastle, who are running out of chances quickly, hosting Bath. It's Northampton versus Gloucester on Saturday, along with Bristol versus Saracens. By the way, if that match was a celebrity couple, we'd be calling it Barrisons. And then it's stupid Exeter versus the Harlequins. In the top 14 is the usual 6-1 split for Saturday and Sunday, with Perpignan versus Clermont, Racing versus Bayonne, Cast versus Montpellier, Toulon versus Lyon, Pau versus Oyonnax, Bordeaux versus La Rochelle. That one looks like a classic, as well as Toulouse versus Stade Français. Those last two, man, they will clearly be vying for game of the week status here at home in the MLR. It's stupidly named Anthem versus the Thundercats, Dallas versus the Bellends, NOLA versus Seattle, Chicago versus DC, and Miami versus Utah, with my beloved Free Jacks enjoying a much needed and deserved bye week. Get better, guys. Well, my friends, that does it for another week. I really wish we could roll right into the European finals next week. It's just hard to feel fully committed to the EBCR and the domestic comps at the same time with the flipping back and forth. Anyway, still, let's just try to be grateful for all the incredible action still to come our way. All gods know we will be missing it this summer. So, to all of you across the globe, cheers. Talk to you soon. And be well.
It gives me great pleasure to be here today.
Oh, it does, neat.
Sports Social Podcast Network.